We are exploring the concept of genius here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Over the past 15 years, a music historian has examined the lives of about 100 people labeled as geniuses to unearth what, you know, what secret sauce makes them so. Is there a greater occurrence of mental health issues, or is that distorted? Are geniuses born, or are they self-made through their hard work? Is genius measurable, or is it whatever we make it to be? Questions to explore together this hour at 800-642-1234. Craig Wright is a professor emeritus of music at Yale University, where he developed an interdisciplinary course called Exploring the Nature of Genius. His new book is The Hidden Habits of Genius: Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. Craig, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate, thanks very much for inviting me.
Well, let's start with the word genius itself. What is the etymology? Where does it come from?
Genius goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks and Romans. It meant that there was a spirit outside of you, a genius. It was outside of you. Everyone had one. But interestingly enough, it didn't belong to that individual. I think in terms of Walt Disney's Aladdin, in a sense. There's this genie out there, and that genie can do great things for you. And lo and behold, it occurred to me one time when I was reading, that's why we have birthday cakes and a candle on the birthday cake, because we are making a votive offering to our genius, encouraging that external spirit to do great things for us in the coming year.
So, well, I'll never look at a birthday cake in the same way.
There you go. Come on, genie, get to work for me.
Has your idea of genius, as you've explored it over the years, has it evolved into something firmer, something that you can define and get your arms around?
Well, I think I can define it, but here's the beauty of genius. It's not an absolute. It's not something that came down from Mount Sinai or anywhere else. It is what each of us wishes to make of us. Each of us in our own way can create a definition of genius depending upon where we are in our particular culture, at a particular time in history, particular location geographically, and so on. You know, someone that's a genius, say, in Salzburg, Austria, such as Mozart, might not be a genius in Lagos, Nigeria, where somebody like Fela Kuti, the founder of the Afrobeat style of music, resided. So it depends on where we are when we happen to be there. It's not an absolute. But let me give you my definition for today. And when I started out with this, I had a very long, verbose definition, but in the course of time, I've cut it down almost to a mathematical equation here. G equals S times N times D. What the heck do I mean by that?
Please explain.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at math either, but this much I can understand. Genius equals significance. In other words, how significant is someone? Kanye West is putting out those new Yeezy tennis shoes, but Alexander Fleming, well, he helped us invent or discover penicillin. I would submit penicillin is probably a lot more significant than the newest style of tennis shoe. Times number. Well, I read that more than 200 million lives have been saved through penicillin, I guess related antibiotics, over the last 80 years. How many people have purchased Kanye West tennis shoe? I'm not absolutely certain. Probably not 200 million. That much I can be certain. Duration. Penicillin, these antibiotics, have now been around for 80-some years, as mentioned, Kanye West, new tennis shoes, so not that many people have been affected. So, again, a genius is somebody who has significant impact over a large number of people over a significant duration or a significant period of time. That's how I define it. But again, as I say, one of the nice things about genius is it's, in a sense, a philosophical exercise here. We can all formulate our own definitions.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Craig Wright. His new book is called The Hidden Habits of Genius, and he explores the patterns, the behaviors of mathematicians and musicians, artists, entrepreneurs all over the globe. He's a professor emeritus of music at Yale University. You can join in on the genius question. Have you ever wondered what made Einstein so good at math and physics? Was it something he was born with, or did it have to do with his behavior? what do you think are some modern day geniuses? Who are they? 800-642-1234. So, Craig, we non-geniuses tend to stereotype geniuses. And I want to throw out some here. You know, I'm thinking someone with a super high IQ, a child prodigy who can compose these masterful symphonies and has perfect pitch, of course. Eccentric, perfect SATs. What's wrong with this picture?
What's wrong with this picture is that it doesn't represent the geniuses that seem to be the A-list geniuses. What it represents is our almost Hollywood-like stereotype of what the genius is supposed to be. The genius slaps his head and says, aha, I've got it. It's this capacity to make a sudden calculation instantaneously in the brain. But that's not the way genius works at all. Genius, if it really is affecting change or having an impact on society, and that takes me back to my G equals S times N times D definition, if that is your criterion, change is your criterion, then the sorts of people that are represented there with the instantaneous correct answer, like an Einstein or something like that on the math test, is not necessarily a genius by any means. There are so many other things that go into it, and the most important thing we have to think about is it takes place over a long period of time. Oh, and by the way, Kate, before I forget, I must here issue a disclaimer. I am no genius.
I'll join your club.
Yeah, and your listeners will find that out very shortly. Just stick with me for another minute or so. You'll see this guy is no genius. sometimes it takes a non-whatever it is to study that particular discipline, that particular field, to understand, have a better sense of how it's done. If you can do it, if you are a genius, you're too busy being a genius to think about how it's done. So maybe we non-geniuses have an advantage in this case. We can, the outsiders looking in, maybe we can see more.
Well, Craig, you taught the Genius course for years at Yale. What happened when you asked your Yale class, who here is a genius? All geniuses, please raise your hands.
Yeah, that was really funny. And that's why I love doing that course. It was just fun. So what would happen is the class clowns, well, they would all elevate, you know, immediately. Yes, me. I'm over here. I'm a genius. And, of course, the person right next to them tended to pull the hands down. Also interesting is the gender discrepancy here, because it would be principally the male that would be doing this. Rarely would a woman ever raise her hand, say, yes, I am a genius. And we can think about that and why we think society might over the eons have caused people to think in those terms. So that was the kind of thing that would go on there. Some people, I would say about a quarter of the class, said when asked, would you like to be a genius? About a quarter of the class said yes. At the end of that course, the last class, I would always save this to the end, I would say, now we've studied these geniuses here for nigh on 4 months. You tell me, how many of you would now like to be a genius? And very few would actually raise their hands.
Yale University music historian Craig Wright is our guide to the world of genius, and he spent years studying what makes a person get this label. Who do you think are some geniuses? What is your definition of one? Is intelligence nature or nurture? How long does it take for a genius to catch on or be appreciated? Join in with your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Craig Wright here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour exploring the traits of geniuses and what are the measures and qualifications. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The dictionary uses words like intelligence and talent. Author Craig Wright has spent years poking and prodding the genius question. His definition today, a genius is a person of extraordinary mental powers whose original works or insights change society in some significant way for good or for ill across cultures and across time. What is your definition? Do you know one? Are geniuses measured by their successes or failures? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Craig Wright's new book is called Hidden Habits of Genius, and he stays with us. So, Craig, let's talk about some modern-day geniuses, those who walk amongst us today. One of the people who you study is the founder of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. What stands out to you there?
What stands out to me there, to be direct, is one of the reasons that the kids didn't raise their hands, I want to be a genius at the end of the course. Not all of these geniuses turn out to be very nice people. And one can read about the history of Mark Zuckerberg and what he was doing at Harvard and the sort of moral compass that he seemed to have. Everyone would have to read on their own, I suppose, to get a sense of this. But I came away with a particular impression, particularly going back and reading the publications of the Harvard Crimson. One of my children happened to be the editor of the Harvard Crimson, so I knew about that and I knew how to get access, although it's publicly available, into those things, so I could read what the students were saying, what the faculty was saying at that particular time. I'll leave that. I feel uncomfortable commenting on someone. In what did our mothers always tell us? If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. So I think I will remain quiet at this point.
Well, you know, when you look at these people, the destructive tendencies of these otherwise brilliant people seems to fit some patterns that you found. Why do geniuses put themselves first and hurt the people around them?
Because they are obsessive. They have a vision. They see something, and they're right. They're correct. They see something that no one else sees, and they think the world is wrong, and they are going to tilt that world until the world comes into alignment with their own vision. As a result, they focus only on their obsession. Those around them suffer. One could say to one's own children, never marry a genius, never partner with a genius or whatever, because your life is going to be made miserable. The individuals focus only on themselves, and those that are nearby become sort of roadkill as this train crashes forward in quest of trying to arrive at this new interpretation of the world. So the geniuses seem to be happy in what they are doing. They're obsessed in what they are doing. Those around them generally are made miserable. And society, we just have to say, well, thank goodness for those around the genius. They have taken one for the team being the rest of us who have benefited from the change effected by the genius.
If you're just joining us, we have Yale music historian Craig Wright, who is our guide to what makes a genius, and he taught the popular Genius course at Yale University. Can artists and musicians be classified as geniuses, or do you think it's only makers and builders? How long does it take for a genius to be appreciated? Can genius thinking come in waves? Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You know, I was really struck. I learned in your book that Charles Dickens walked 15 miles a day through the streets of London while he thought of A Christmas Carol. And I had no idea. What does the ability to focus and really soak in your surroundings have to do with being a genius?
I have an interesting story related to that, Kate. And Wisconsin, of course, is the dairy state.
We are.
As I say in my book there, it occurred to me one day that if you want to be a genius, what you have to do is buy a cow. Now, that sounds preposterous, but I'm going somewhere.
Okay.
We were talking about Charles. Yeah, I'll get there, but just bear with me. You're talking about Charles Dickens wandering through the streets of London. And I do list there in the book more than a dozen people who were Einstein, Curie, and so on, who are fanatical walkers. There's a reason for this. Walking relaxes them. They are generally almost always solitary walkers. They walk by themselves so as to relax. There is a whole science behind relaxation, various sorts of neurotransmitters that can course through your brain at particular times of the day in particular states of mind that allow you to make associative linkages that would otherwise not happen, pulling together ideas that are in there subliminally, but now only come together when you are relaxed. So that's Charles Dickens wandering through London. We could say the same thing about Einstein when he goes sailing. We could say the same thing with regard to Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison, who said, I get my best thoughts when mowing the lawn in New York. George Balanchine said, all of my great ideas come when I'm ironing. And this is where I'm going with my cow story. The American artist, we were talking about artists a moment ago, Grant Wood, once said, all the great ideas that I've ever had came to me while I was milking a cow. Now, that sounds preposterous, but then you begin to look up the history of Grant Wood, and he came from Amarosa, I guess it is, maybe it's Anamosa, yeah, A-N-A-M-O-S-A, Anamosa, Iowa, which is a farm community on the other side of the Mississippi there, as you probably know far better than I, and he came from a farm family. He's the painter of the famous American Gothic, the gaunt couple, the gentleman holding a pitchfork. We probably all have that in our mind. So the point of this is, get relaxed. Get relaxed. Relaxation is one of these hidden habits of genius. You have to allow yourself to go into this particular mindset at particular points in order to have these creative ideas.
And you also saw that in the Peanuts cartoonist Charles Schulz, who would do a lot of doodling, and something would come to them, and a cartoon would come to him, and you said he would just put it down as quickly as he could so he didn't lose it.
Yeah. Don't push. Don't put, when you want to have creative ideas, don't push. There's the famous Alfred Hitch, John Cleese, the British comic and now philosopher, tells the story of Alfred Hitchcock getting his writers together. They need to come up with a great scene. And what would he do? He'd say, we're pushing. Don't push. And then he would tell a funny story, a joke. And they'd all start to laugh, and they'd relax, and these barriers would be broken down. And then eventually it would come. So there are moments in this process, in the creative process, and that's what we're all trying to do, is effect change, creativity, change the world for the better, where the best thing we can do is just relax and allow what's already in there to coalesce in the form of a new insight.
You mentioned the scientist Marie Curie, who was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize. She comes up quite a bit as you look at her life. What about her behaviors and patterns are notable?
Well, Curie, of course, is an interesting case, the first woman ever to win a Nobel Prize, 1903 for physics, the only person to ever win two Nobel Prizes in two different fields, if you rule out the Peace Prize, which is sort of in a different category. Physics, 1903, chemistry, 1911, I believe. So what were her particular characteristics? Relentless. In my book, I fold that into the chapter, Find Your Missing Piece. In other words, be passionate about something. And do you know that story, Kate? Maybe you don't know. It's a child story. The Missing Piece?
I've heard of it, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's this humanoid in the shape of this sphere that rolls along through life, missing a piece, spending the entire life looking for this. Finally, the humanoid finds the piece, puts it in, and the humanoid, strangely, is not all that happy. It's the quest that made them happiest, not finding it, but searching. The search is everything. And that's how I frame this issue with Marie Curie, that she was looking for something. She knew that there was stuff sitting there in radon. Nobody could figure out what the heck is going on here. What is this thing a million times more powerful than actual uranium? It's radon. It's radium. And she was able to find it. But that was her missing piece. Just this infinitesimal amount, a gram of radium that she discovered, which is now the basis of still is of radiation therapy for cancer and things such as that. So she was somebody that was out there obsessively, passionately following a desire to find something that would change the world. That was her missing piece. And ultimately, she found it.
That journey of a genius, and not so much the Eureka moment. We have Yale music historian Craig Wright on this journey on what genius means, how to spot it, how to incorporate traits into our own lives. Who would you ascribe to be geniuses alive today? Have you known anyone in your circles who you consider to have genius qualities? What are some of their behaviors and patterns that help them excel? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back to talk more in a moment with Craig Wright after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we explore the traits of geniuses. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Yale University music historian Craig Wright has closely looked at the lives of about 100 people to find out what sets them apart. He writes, many female geniuses were hidden from view for centuries because men wrote them out of history. Can you think of uncredited geniuses that, due to their gender or their race or their lifestyle, have not been acknowledged for their contributions? Who has changed the world in subtle and bold ways? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Craig Wright's new book is called The Hidden Habits of Genius, Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. And he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Carl is joining us from Madison. Hi, Carl. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question for your guest where he might figure crystallized intelligence into his equation, if at all.
So crystallized intelligence. First, explain what that is.
From my understanding, crystallized intelligence is the intelligence gained over age.
Craig?
Well, what is it they say? Wisdom is the daughter of experience, right? Mm. And I think that is essentially true, and that there is a great deal to support of the notion of crystallized intelligence. What it means is that you have the opportunity in life to learn for a lifetime and to build a rich reservoir of information. That's, I suppose, why we are so all keen on becoming lifetime learners. And as I look back through my book and the people in my book, so many of them were not Phi Beta Kappa. So many of them were actually college dropouts. Why did they drop out? Because they weren't getting what they wanted to learn in colleges or universities. So they learned on their own. So, and they learn for a lifetime, and they put it in there, and they continued to add to the fund as time went on, right into their last decades. Go ahead, Kate. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Did you find that some of their greatest accomplishments occurred late in life, or did it vary?
It did vary. Good point. It varied. It seems to manifest most early in the sciences, and maybe that it is possible that the scientific gift is really a gift, and it's part of the nature rather than nurture process. But if we look at somebody like Isaac Newton, who reached his peak in a sense at age 22 with his Annus Mirabilis there, with the discovery of calculus and the color spectrum and gravity and all those things, when he's 22, or Albert Einstein when he's roughly 25, 26 there in 1905, where he writes five seminal papers, one of which he won the Nobel Prize for, another set the groundwork for his theory of special relativity, and then that same year issued the famous equation E equals mc squared. He's 26 when he's doing all of that. But on the other hand, Shakespeare doesn't reach his stride until really late 30s, and other individuals, Giuseppe Verdi is writing some great operas into his 70s. Grandma Moses didn't pick up a paintbrush until she's 67, and so on. So it depends. It may be field relevant to a degree. But what I see as I look back over all of these geniuses through the centuries, that there is no statute of limitation for becoming a genius. It's not age dependent. We're all still in the game as long as we want to push ourselves to stay in the game.
Well, not age dependent, but what about lifestyle dependent? What if a genius is, say, born poor or rich? What did you see there from where the geniuses come from and their family?
It is striking, and I'm not sure that anybody's ever really articulated this. Just as I'm pretty sure that nobody really defines what genius is. But what we see is, and it should be perfectly obvious, but the geniuses, first of all, are not genetic. They don't come along through long lineages of geniuses. Why? Because generally speaking, they're all born within the middle class. If there's no opportunity, if you were born in abject poverty, you don't have the capacity to get in the game. You're locked out from the very beginning. If you have too much wealth and too much opportunity, there's no incentive there. If you're riding along and doing well with the status quo, why change anything? So I would say almost to a person that these people come from the middle class. And you can look at the people that are out there today, such as Jeff Bezos. I think his natural father actually ran a bicycle shop, which is a great profession, but it's not that of a billionaire. And on with Gates, sort of upper middle class, Elon Musk, very middle class, Kanye West, the offspring of a single mother, middle class. She was a university professor, but they're all from the middle class, strangely enough.
We're talking with Craig Wright. The new book is called The Hidden Habits of Genius, and he spent the better part of 15 years understanding what makes a person so, examining the lives of dozens of people considered genius. What is your definition? Have you found a genius around you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Craig, it seems like great minds through history may also have a photographic or eidetic memory. I'm thinking of like chess champions, the ability to recall an image after only seeing it once. What did you find there?
Well, I would push back a little bit there, Kate. I would say chess champions generally are not geniuses. The person who's the genius is the guy or gal who invented the game of chess. So they're just playing a game that somebody else invented, and I would say they're closer to the idiosavant. They have this gift that for doing something very quickly that is impressive to the rest of us, but they don't change the world in the least. So that's what I would say about chess professionals. Now, refresh my memory again, Kate. What did you say about the others?
Well, what does like photographic memory or the ability to recall images after seeing them only once? How does that affect your ability to get ahead or to concentrate?
Yeah, I think it does, particularly at the time when you want to concentrate. The more stuff that you have in there and the more accurately you can remember it, the more likely you are to make the correct insight or come to the correct answer. Let's take music, for example. It sure helps to have the natural gift of perfect pitch. I don't have it. I have a sister that had it, which is very strange. It's floating around there somewhere in that genetic pool. I don't have it. But if you are a professional musician and a performer and you are working through a score or something, you can hear in an inner ear and know exactly what that pitch is and know exactly where to go on that keyboard. It's a big advantage. So there are certain natural gifts, such as an eidetic memory. Nikola Tesla supposedly had one and Picasso in the visual arts that can be a big aid. Memory is a help, but it's just one of the sorts of things that helps you get in the game. It's not going to turn you into, by itself, it's not certainly not going to turn you into a genius.
Let's look at rebellious geniuses. You look at Martin Luther King Jr. labeling him as a rebellious genius. Tell us what that is.
Well, obviously, it's a contrarian. Somebody's willing and has the courage to take a contrarian position. Geniuses think, as we famously say with the metaphor, thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. They go outside the box. They see things differently. Society generally, although we all honor the geniuses, we don't like the genius because the geniuses require us to change. And our default position here in life generally is not to change. We're perfectly comfortable where we are, even though there might be a freight train coming in the other direction. We are intuitively antithetical to change, and that's one of the reasons these geniuses are unpopular. But those that change the world see something different, and they urge us to change the world so as to harmonize with their particular vision. My favorite example, I suppose, here is Steve Jobs with his famous exhortation in a TV commercial for Apple back in the late 90s, think different, because that's what these geniuses do. It may not be grammatically correct, but maybe think different there is actually
certainly a mantra they could put on their T-shirts walking around.
Yeah, think different. Be rebellious. Take a contrarian position. Think backwards. So oftentimes that leads to great results.
And we have today like genius bars and things like that from Apple. It you can almost see the marketing of genius.
Yeah, it is a marketing of genius, and strangely enough, it's used in books. I mean, how many books do you see with the word genius on the title? And why is it there? It's there because people are interested in the word. They don't really understand the word, and they'll tend to buy the book. It seems to be an elevating experience, an opportunity to learn more. Then when you open the book, you find out it really has little to do with the process of genius at all. It's just a marketing ploy.
Well, your book is the exception.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Kate, for that. So we love the word because we want to know how the magic is done. How are exceptional things in this world accomplished? How do exceptional leaders come about? What personal traits do they have? We want to understand these, and we are willing to plunk down $25 or whatever it might happen to be if that particular book can offer some insights into exceptional human accomplishment.
Craig Wright explores the patterns and behavior of famously smart mathematicians and musicians, artists, entrepreneurs. We've been talking about some ideas and habits for us non-geniuses to think about. Are you open to new and unfamiliar experience? Are you fearless when you explore a new place? Just take the subway or the train by yourself. Do you keep your passions to yourself, like reading or painting or travel? Why is that? Still time to talk about genius, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Craig Wright here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Craig Wright about what makes a genius and practical ways to build on 14 traits. He finds that the movers and shakers of the world seem to embrace a diverse range of skills, perspectives, and habits of mind. He writes, "The greatest genius produces the greatest impact on the greatest number of people over the longest period of time." On that, let's take a call. Dale is with us from River Falls this morning. Hi, Dale. What would you like to add about geniuses?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Curious about whether or not your book touches on or if you have any thoughts on the correlation between genius and procrastination and or flat-out laziness.
Is it Dale? You're my kind of guy. Flat-out laziness. Well, that's probably why I'm not a... What a great question. Well, that's probably why I'm not a genius, because sometimes I get lazy. And geniuses are never lazy. Can you... Dale may no longer be on the line, but can you name a lazy genius, Dale? I don't think.
Well, no, but what I'm wondering is that have there been examples, and I'm sure that there are, how would we ever know that I have a really great idea, but I just never got around to, you know, making it, putting it into action. So how would you know whether or not there were brilliant ideas?
That's a great question. It almost brings me to the Einstein on the desert island example, I suppose. The genius in potentia, the genius that has the capacity to do something but doesn't do it. Now, according to my definition, that individual must effect change, good or for ill, but change society in some way. And if, let's say Dale is the genius, but Dale has the capacity to do something, an act of genius, but doesn't do it, in my definition, he's out of the game. That doesn't count. He's not a genius because he hasn't changed the world in any way. He had the capacity to do so, but he didn't do it.
Dale, thank you for that question. Let's bring in Deb now in Cottage Grove. Hi, Deb.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering if you did identify any geniuses that had a more negative impact on society. Like, would Hitler have been identified as a genius just for ability to influence people?
That's a good question again. In a way, it's like I'm going to put you guys in my genius course here. I'm still teaching it online each summer, and we'll move you to the front of the class. These are very good questions. One about the potential to be a genius, and the other, repeat the question once again, just to make sure that I've got a full understanding of it.
So did you identify any geniuses that had a negative impact on society?
Negative impact. Yeah, well, of course, with the definition of genius, for good or for ill, it's up to each of us to insert that clause or phrase if we want to do that. And some people do not want to do that. And some people get very upset, and I have given public lectures on this topic. They get very upset because obviously it brings into play people such as the aforementioned Adolf Hitler, and Joseph Stalin, what does one do with Mao Zedong? These are issues that some people, because of their heritage, their personal experience, are extremely uncomfortable with. These are not geniuses, they will say. These people are simply psychotics. If asked in a classroom, what do you, Craig, think, and I would want to hear from the students first, I think if, with my definition, I would allow for good or for ill, and you would have to say that these are geniuses, even though they are destructive. But it's all a question of semantics and philosophical distinctions at this point. The essential thing is to set up, I guess, democratic institutions where that is not possible, where that evil cannot flourish, where that evil cannot be given a foothold.
Craig, did you find a greater occurrence of mental health issues, or is that perception of geniuses distorted?
No, I don't think it is distorted, and there is a greater instance of mental health issues, and we could go through the statistics on all of that, but we probably don't have time. Very quickly, in terms of mental imbalance, the scientists seem not to have much at all by way of mental disorder, a level of mental disorder that is in no way noticeable, really, beyond the norm of the general populace. But if we come to painters, to writers, and particularly to poets, then it becomes very pronounced. And I could list of my approximately 100 geniuses that I study, I say fully 35% of them could be identified as having some form of mental disorder. But the good news here, of course, is that you can use that mental disorder. You see the world differently than other people, and you can bring that in. That can become a reservoir of creative energy for you. It can become a source of creative ideas for you. And we could talk about the people over time that have done that. So I would say, yes, that there is a correlation between mental disorder, a higher instance of mental disorder with these A-list game changers than there is with the general population.
Craig Wright is with us, author of The Hidden Habits of Genius. He's a professor emeritus of music at Yale University, teaches the Genius course. Still time to talk at 800-642-1234. Craig, I want to change gears here and ask you what advice you would give to parents, parents who may want to foster some type of genius in their kids.
My advice is don't do that. No. Yeah. Well, look, don't try to foster it. I mean, don't push it. Relax. Don't push it. It's going to happen with or without you. You can nudge offspring in a particular direction. Having now 4 children and 7 grandchildren, I've come to see, I believe, that parents are hugely overrated. Natural gifts are important. General environment important. Who their peers are important. And who they themselves become. But I would say don't push. Don't be too obsessive about getting those grades or getting into that Ivy League school. There's 300 great colleges in this country that you can go to. One of my friends who I consider is a genius was graduated from the University of Wisconsin at Whitewater. Relax, parents. Take it easy. Don't worry about those grades. If that student is cross-training, taking a lot of diverse courses, that's far more important than the grades that they're getting. Encourage those kids to get different sorts of experiences, to have social experiences. Give them the capacity to fail and pull themselves up from that sort of failure. These are the kinds of things that I would encourage. Diversity, experience, giving them the chance to get out there in the world on their own.
I want to land on that final lesson in your book from geniuses, and that is to be more efficient and productive. How should we do that, and why is that so important?
Well, saves time. Life is precious, and we don't want to waste it. As I get older and older, I see, gosh, there's so much that you can do, and it's so exciting. It's so much fun. There's no reason that this should shut down. So how can we be more efficient? And I could go into specifics about this. The last 2 chapters of my book, The Hidden Habits of Genius, the next to last one is relax, and now the last one is it's time to get to work. It's time to concentrate. And there are specific things that you can do, like get one place that you go to every day. Go there at the same time every day. Have symbols of the people that you love around you, pictures of them. Have symbols of your accomplishments. Have people that I have here on my desk. I'm now holding a little statuette of Nikola Tesla. I've got a Mozart statue here. Have people that you respect and emulate around you, and they will inspire you. So get in there and get the job done, because if I can do it, everybody can do it, and I'm no genius.
Craig, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Craig Wright is a professor emeritus of music at Yale University. His new book is called The Hidden Habits of Genius: Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.